Welcome to season 8. Gosh, it feels so good to say that. And I'm excited for all the incredible voices to share with you this season. Thank you for continuing to tune in and grow our listening audience with each new episode. We open season 8 at a time when many of our listeners are leaving the spaces of summertime mode and returning to the world of structure and routines. Back to school they go. For some of our listeners, this might be met with a sigh of relief. The kids, the snacks, the messes. And for others, perhaps a bittersweet longing for more days of play and freedom. Regardless of your stand, transitions can grow our stress, and the self-care and support of our mental health is a much-needed focus. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness or injury. WonderCast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. In this episode, we are joined by Dr. Nichelle Haynes, co-owner of Reproductive Psychiatry and Counseling based out of Austin, Texas, and podcast host of More Than Mom with Dr. Nichelle Haynes. Join us as we discuss the importance of self-care and utilizing tools in transitions. There is only one you in all the world, so let's love her well. This is Dr. Nichelle Haynes.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nichelle Haynes. I'm a perinatal psychiatrist here in Austin, Texas. I am co-owner of a practice, Reproductive Psychiatry and Counseling. I'm active on social media. I'm a podcaster with my own podcast, More Than Mom with Dr. Nichelle Haynes, where I help people try to find themselves in and beyond motherhood.
How long have you been in practice in the Austin area?
Oh, that's a great question. I think 7 years, because I moved right as my second one was born, and he's 7 now. So I've been in Austin for 7 years. I'm originally from the Austin area, so I'm back home. And I started in an inpatient unit where I was seeing people who were very, very ill. And it was very taxing with two little ones. And so I moved over to private practice, outpatient private practice, about, it's been, I think, 5 years now.
You're one of the rare unicorns of true Austinites.
They go away for training and stuff. And so I came back as soon as I could.
So for our listening audience and for myself, I had to do a little bit of Googling. Why don't you, if you're comfortable, share a little bit about what a perinatal psychiatrist is and what that sort of encompasses?
Okay, I'm happy to. I want to say, like, no shame for not knowing, because I really didn't even know in residency that this was a thing. Found it after my training and I was like, oh yeah, that's right for me. So a perinatal psychiatrist is a medical doctor who went through psychiatry training and has additional training in helping people who are intending to get pregnant, postpartum, or breastfeeding. I also include infertility in that realm. You could also say reproductive psychiatrist, and that would include other things like perimenopause or premenstrual disorders like PMDD, PMS, that kind of thing. I prefer the stuff more around pregnancy. So I say perinatal, but I think they're mostly interchangeable, perinatal psychiatrist or reproductive psychiatrist.
That's incredible. In your practice, is it virtual or is it more in person associated with an actual office?
We do have an actual office, but I have found that the vast majority of people want to be seen virtually. I started pre-COVID. I actually started part-time pre-COVID, and then I started full-time the same week that everything shut down and went into lockdown. It was nice because we were already functioning virtually, and so we didn't really have to change anything.
Again, another unicorn. You were like ahead of the curve, the virtual curve.
Thank goodness. Yes, and so we were functioning just fine during COVID and eventually wanted to, you know, have an office because we were seeing some people who wanted to see us in person. But there is this way in which you probably remember when you have an infant or a little one, picking them up, packing them into, you know, their car seat and doing all the things to get to a visit is really difficult, or maybe finding childcare is really difficult. So our virtual appointments allow for kiddos to be present, right? That like, okay, maybe the little one's taking a nap and I'll just see you at nap time. And if they wake up, well, that's what we do. We deal with it and it's no big deal. And honestly, that's one of my favorite parts of my job is getting to see my patients with their kiddos. So yeah, virtual tends to be preferred. So we're mostly virtual, but we do have an office here.
I love that. That is one positive I think that has really grown out of the COVID era is just the acknowledgement of why spend 30 minutes in a car one direction to get somewhere and 30 minutes back to be depleted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially for our listening population, when so many of them have appointments that take them into medical offices and for treatment and for all these other things, you can just take one of those appointments and make it in a space that's more functional for them. I feel like that's a big win right there.
Oh, I think so too. There's a lot that can be gained on my end from seeing someone in their environment, right? They may be a little bit more comfortable talking about certain things, or, you know, I can kind of see what's going on behind the scenes, right? If everything is completely tidy in its space and they're like, oh, everything's great. I'm like, are we sure we don't need to talk about anxiety? Right? There's like so many like little cues for me that it's helpful. Additional information from a virtual appointment.
Correct. You kind of get the whole picture a little bit better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think that this is a great space for us to talk about mental health and this whole process of doing self-care and self-advocacy. We are coming up on yet another transition. I feel like school starts earlier, and at least in the Austin area, school starts here the week of August 12th. So we are fast approaching that transition for many of our listeners coming off of their summer schedule and moving into the rapid pace of back to school. If you're listening from maybe the East Coast or other parts of the country, I know that you still have a lucky extra month. Enjoy it for all of us. But we are not there. We are fast approaching the tornadic speed, which is back to school. And in that time frame, a lot of transitions can cause unique stress, I think, especially in the role of being a mom, maybe as a caregiver to an ill co-parent, or you're ill or facing an injury, recovering yourself. I feel like there's all these extra balls that we are keeping afloat. And I would love to listen in on your perspective on what that acknowledgement of that mental health need could look like and how to appropriate some good self-care.
I could talk all day about this topic. I first want to acknowledge that our brains really like to know what to expect. This is the reason that you take the same route every day. This is the reason that you like, you know, you have your favorites and you don't always deviate from them, right? Our brains rely on like the schema, right? That you like know when you walk into a certain restaurant, that's how it's going to go. And it reduces anxiety to have the known pieces of like, this is how it's going to go. And in these transitional times, whether it's going back to school or it's trying to figure out how to manage, you know, XYZ appointment or this new specialist that you need to be, you know, working with, or whatever the transition happens to be, we are faced with the unknown. And that is inherently anxiety provoking. And that tends to be a place where we will kind of give up the things that we know are working for us because we're kind of a little frazzled about, you know, this new thing and fitting it in and how to make it work. And the best thing I can think of, just generally without having all of the details, is to take the moment to slow down. And I know when we're in transition, it doesn't feel like we have the moment, but I promise you that you do. You have the moment. It does not have to be, you know, the bubble baths and the spa day and the checking out completely. The moment is literally a moment to check in with yourself. How are things going? What's going well? What am I stressed about? What am I feeling? And use that information to move forward in a way that supports you. So one of my favorite tricks to discuss with my patients is to talk about adding the check-in habit to a habit that's already working for you. Hopefully, you have a good habit of washing your hands after you use the restroom. And we can add the check-in to that habit, right? That we are there in a moment. Maybe we get like a soap that smells really good. And, you know, maybe we're there and we're washing our hands. And instead of just like rushing through it and washing our hands and moving on to the next thing, we take an extra 10 seconds, right? You take the extra time. We don't wash our hands long enough anyway. Wash your hands, take the minute and say like, how are things going? How am I? And maybe after you rinse your hands, you smell the nice soap on your hands and you just like take the deep breath and let your nervous system like settle a little bit. And those little habits over time will remind you to check in at times where you might be feeling activated or you might be feeling unsure or you might be feeling something that's uncomfortable, or maybe you're feeling something that's good and you get to relish in it, right? That you're just doing that check-in a lot more often. And that can just kind of give you the cue that like, okay, something's got to change here. And maybe this something is, you know, we're adjusting the morning routine, or it could be literally anything. Maybe this something is like, okay, I just need to take a breath. Maybe we're like going to skip soccer practice today because we're all overwhelmed and we all need to like take a chill a little bit. So those little times of check-in can be really helpful in these transitional times, or really always, to kind of see what's going on with you and see what you need. Because if you don't know what you need, how can you do it?
Yeah, that's true. I guess that is like as simple as it sounds to just, you know, check in. That really does set the foundation for discovering what it is that you need. Now, if you find yourself checking in and you find it not making that much of a difference, or maybe you're acknowledging like, whoa, this is a much larger issue. What then?
Well, you use the information, right, from the check-in. Okay, maybe it's a much larger issue. What am I needing, right? Is the issue I need support? Is the issue everything's actually okay, but I'm feeling overwhelmed? Is the issue like you're taking an inventory, right? And you're kind of in a calm moment checking in. Because when we're not calm, the check-in is not going to be, we're not going to be problem solving in that check-in moment if we're not regulated, because that's not how our brains work. If you think about like the example I love to use is if there's a bear around, you're not like thinking about meal planning. You're thinking about protecting yourself, right?
Correct.
So if you are dysregulated, there's lots happening. You know, maybe the environment's chaotic or there's too much going on, or you're under financial stress or whatever the thing happens to be, you're not able to use the parts of your brain that are problem-solving parts of your brain. You're just using the fight or flight system as if there was a bear around you, and you're not doing your taxes when a bear's around. So you got to regulate, get the bear out of the house, and then you can start problem-solving. So slow, deep breaths are one of the easiest, quickest ways to bring about some regulation. So if you're unsure, you got five slow deep breaths, maybe the hand over your heart, checking in with yourself, being kind to yourself, what's going on here? And then use that information to move forward.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think the coupling it with an everyday task that you're already kind of doing should not really take any extra time for so many of our community listeners who maybe are facing illness or recovering from injury. They already feel so maxed out on space and time, and probably can look at their day and think of a million things not going well. How do they get out of that mindset of one little change in a behavior could snowball and affect other things?
I'm finding that I am talking a lot in metaphors, but I think they work so well. So I'm just going to keep going with it.
Love it.
This is kind of like psychiatrist speak. But we can all do an exercise right now. I want you to be in your room, right? And I want you to pick a color. Like, you see something in your room that is that color. What do you see? For you, I see like you have a yellow shirt, right? So I want you to look around your room, and I want you to just like mentally take note of everything that's yellow. And if you're at home doing this, okay, you pick your color, you look for your color thing, right? Okay, so I want you to close your eyes and I want you to tell me all the things in your room that are red, a different color. If you're at home, you choose a different color from what you had before. Okay, so now open. How many more red things do you see than you remembered seeing?
Wow, a lot.
A lot, right? Our attention is not infinite. And when we are expecting to see something, that we are going to see more of that thing, right? So you might have seen a lot of yellow things, but you didn't see a whole lot of red things. And there's a lot more that's happening that we are not aware of, because our brains are primed to look for different things. So adding in the check-in opens the door for us to check in on positive things that we may not have seen before. And when we are primed to look for positive things, we might see more positive things. So checking in with yourself is one of the first very rudimentary steps to improving how we feel overall. So we might just feel the warm cup of tea in our hands and be grateful for that instead of frustrated that we had to wash the mug. It didn't change anything, but we feel better. And so we have a lot more power than we think we do to adjust. And of course, there are limits to that, right? Like if we are really struggling that, you know, we need some additional support, that's totally fine. But these are things that everyday people can do that might make small incremental changes that grow over time that help us feel better.
Love that concept of this practice can support everyone where they're at. If somebody listening is doing these practices and putting these behaviors into place, and they're recognizing that it still feels too heavy to hold, what are their next steps?
Gosh, it really depends. I think identifying the need underneath is the core of it. If you are dealing with, you know, maybe some version of trauma, maybe you need a safe space to process through that trauma. If you're dealing with like, just don't have enough time, well, let's figure out some way to find you some support that maybe you haven't thought of. I think having a therapist is so life-changing for a lot of people. That can be a wonderful place to start or continue the journey. We don't have to only go to therapy when things are at their most crucial, where we're like really, really, really struggling. That we could start in times where like things are, you know, like a little meh, but they're okay. And you can have some improvement there too. So I think therapy is a great option for a lot of people. I think community is crucial for us as human beings. And if you don't know where to start, one of those is probably going to be helpful in some way.
How do you see the role that stress plays in mental health in the work that you do?
It's everything. It's just kind of like the same thing with the bear, right? If you're under stress, like nothing else matters. I mean, it's a epidemic. Stress is probably one of the like worst things for our health. And of course, there's supposed to be some level of stress. Like if you don't have some level of stress, like I'm worried about you because you're apathetic. There's a curve, right? There's like, okay, if you have zero stress, maybe you're apathetic. If you have way too much stress, you're paralyzed by the stress. But we want to kind of exist in this middle zone where the stress is motivating. Right? If you're not at least a little bit worried about a car accident, you're not going to put your seatbelt on. So we have to find that like zone. And if you find yourself getting out of that optimal zone, that, you know, that's definitely health-wise, just absolutely, it's very detrimental to your health and your mental health, of course. But you want to kind of exist in that zone, that optimal zone.
Yeah. Our Wonders and Worries curriculum, we talk to kids about this concept of even in early humanity, you had that fear of being eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or being eaten by a creature and having to have that sense of stress to encourage you to make tools to get your food faster and to be able to move and evolve from that threat. And how without that threat, we as a race would not have evolved into higher functioning levels of humans. That's kind of how we explain to kids this concept of we've always had some stress. It's just how did it help us and grow us versus halt us in our growth and keep us stagnant or paralyzed.
I mean, learning your ABCs is stressful, but you need to know it to know how to read. Same thing. And I like that example for little ones. That's great.
In our community, especially our listening audience here with WonderCast, so many of them are impacted by illness or injury and already carry that shame and that guilt of being a burden to their loved one. I feel like it's so easy for them to say, I have to address the physical parts of my illness. I have to address, you know, maybe my heart disease or this pacemaker I have to put in, or maybe this dialysis I have to go to 3 times a week to just be able to keep my body systems functioning. I feel guilty about taking extra time to focus on my emotional wellness as well. What advice do you have for them if they're reluctant in getting that care for themselves?
We have to remember that our brains are organs, and just like any other organ, it deserves care. Like you said, if you need an LVAD or you need a, you know, surgery for your whatever toe, I don't know, then most people are going to take care of that. And part of the reason I chose psychiatry is because our mental health is the foundation for the rest of our health. If you are so depressed that you cannot get out of bed, do you think that you're going to take care of that toe surgery? No, you're not. So it's fighting against the stigma of mental health care, which we have to acknowledge, and that's difficult. It's remembering that when you are well, you are the better version of yourself. Well, mentally, I mean, you are a better version of yourself. And not only you benefit, but the people around you benefit. There's a ton of data around mental illness in the postpartum period and how it can be impactful for children who are raised by parents who have mental illness. And I'm not saying that to help make anyone feel guilty, just to let you know that we know that your mental health does not just impact you. And a lot of people have the guilt or the shame, as you were mentioning, about taking care of themselves. And they can't go through that front door of taking care of themselves because that door is too shameful. But if we can go through the side door into the same room of this helps other people, sometimes we can get into the room and start taking care of ourselves. And I'm okay with that. As long as you get started, I'm okay with however you got there. If the shame or guilt exists, maybe we reframe it to say like, well, this benefits other people, so I'm going to at least try it. And then you also get the benefit too. So, hey, I'll take the side door approach.
Correct. Do you find that there are enough resources available for the financial impact of having to get mental wellness? For a lot of our listeners, I know that they are fighting with insurance companies about everything, about a necessary surgery or a necessary medicine that their body needs. Mm-hmm. For so many of them, one more fight to just be able to utilize psychiatry services or psychological support, it's like, I don't know that I have that fight in me for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And this is where we collectively have to fight against the stigma of mental health care, that there's supposed to be mental health parity in our, you know, insurance policies, but it's not. Just to be frank, it doesn't exist in the same ways that we would hope. Yeah, there's not enough resources, and it's devastating, sad.
I guess an option would be for families who maybe have insurance coverage that's less than desirable in terms of mental health support, should they then just talk to their care coordinators, maybe for their healthcare environment that they're already collaborating with, and see if there are other forms of mental health that are maybe on a sliding scale or on nonprofits in the area? Is that what you kind of encourage, like how they go about finding things that are within their resources that they can actualize into reality?
I find that primary care physicians generally have their pulse on some of these things. The vast majority of psychiatric medications are not prescribed by psychiatrists. There's just so few of us that statistically we don't prescribe that big proportion of medications. So primary care physicians, pediatricians, they have their pulse on what's going on in the community generally. And I don't want to put more on their plate, but I think it's really, they sometimes know. There are a large number of nonprofits that are around that provide online group therapy, which I think is really helpful. In my field, I typically refer to postpartum.net. That's Postpartum Support International. They have, gosh, dozens of online groups that meet, and they have all different versions, you know, lost parents, parents with bipolar disorder, parents that have had a kid in the NICU. They have all kinds of support groups. And I think there are other organizations that, you know, might cater to other types of populations, right? Like heart disease or, you know, whatever the thing is that you're looking for. You could always just Google, or you can do an internet search for whatever you're dealing with, online support group. And generally those are low cost and often they're free.
Well, that's incredible.
Yeah, they're great resources. And, you know, they're online and they're readily accessible, especially, you know, some of the things we were talking about before. They're easy to integrate into your life, or easier. Yeah.
Absolutely. Gosh, that's so helpful. And for our listeners, if they wanted to find your podcast or find your practice, how would they go about doing that?
So my podcast is called More Than Mom with Dr. Nichelle Haynes. I am on most of the streaming platforms. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at Dr. Nichelle Haynes. It's Nichelle with an N. That's why some people don't find me. And then my practice is reproductive psychiatry and counseling. We are here in Austin, and we are available for anyone who is a resident of Texas. So we can, you know, see you virtually if you're in Texas. And you can find us rpcclinic.com or on Instagram at rpcclinic.
Perfect. And we will also tag all of this in our episode on our Wonders and Worries website. So that will be there as well, so that they can find you through that.
Great. Thank you.
I definitely want to be mindful of your time. Is there anything that I have failed to mention, or anything else that you would like to share with our listening population?
Oh, Julie, we could just talk all day. I could just chat all day about any of these things. I think the main thing is taking care of your mental health might seem really daunting, especially if you're struggling, but we can all make movement in a direction that helps us feel good in our daily lives. And if we need support, that there are options out there, that there's no need to tough it out. And in fact, toughing it out is not beneficial for you or for anyone else. That if you need medications, that's why they're there. And we can have an in-depth discussion about risk and benefit and all those things. I think the main thing is take care of your mental health. And I don't want to just say that to say like, yeah, take care of your mental health, just do it. But that it is totally possible to do it and not struggle in the same way that you are right now, or feel better in that struggle. Just allow yourself to believe that you can be okay, and that it's going to be okay.
I am so grateful to you. Thank you so much for being my podcast guest today. And I'm so excited for people to continue to follow along on your podcast, More Than Mom with Dr. Nichelle Haynes. And we will be plugging that. So please check that out. And I guess if people have follow-up questions, please reach out and let us know. And we would love to point you in the direction of Dr. Haynes as well.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back, as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.